You want to take it from the top?
Yeah, let's try it. Okay.
He will rock you. He will roll you. Baby, don't you know? My he will move your soul. All day, all night, you feel my heat. Feel my heat.
I think we should repeat that again.
Feel my heat.
Feel my heat. Yeah, it's definitely cool. Let's lay it down. Nick?
You want to lay it down?
Are we rolling on the rehearsal?
Still rolling. Do it one more time. Ready? And... what have you done? Oh, it's the sound of my gun. Oh, what have you done? Oh, it's the sound.
Actually hear myself. All right, welcome to In the Loop. It is Wednesday, February 15th, the day after Valentine's Day, or as I like to think of it, Saint Valentine's Day, when a bunch of people got all beheaded and died and bloody and such. It's my point of view on it. So I obviously had a really great day yesterday. How about you? You are listening to freeradiosaic.org from the lucky number 13th floor of the Michigan building of the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. I hate saying of that many times. If you're listening to the podcast version of this, then why the hell aren't you listening live? That's what I have to say to you. This is a weekly talk radio talk show from freeradiosaic.org that is rebroadcast on podomatic.com. The site for that is kbarrick.podomatic.com. Also has a companion website, which will be very important for tonight's show, which you can reach at outburst.blogspot.com. You can also find that through the program notes and listings for my show on the freeradiosaic.org website. I'm just going to do a little disclaimer, which, you know, you probably know, it's kind of obvious anyways, but all opinions voiced on this show do not represent anyone else's besides maybe the person who's actually speaking them. I might not even represent my own opinion sometimes. It might just be a joke that you're taking the wrong way. So don't get mad at anybody, or if you have to get mad at somebody, get mad at me. And if you're listening to this on podcast and you're mad at me, come and listen to it live. And then you can yell at me using caps lock in the chat portion of the show. And we have a guest with us. As I turn up your mic, and the listeners who are online are listening for you. So.
Okay.
To introduce yourself.
All right. My name's John Akapol. I'm a comic book artist living here in Chicago and going to the Art Institute currently. Yeah. What more introduction do you need?
Looks like your roomie Bill is listening.
Oh, hey, Bill. What's up? Hope you enjoy the show tonight. We're talking about cartoons and controversial cartoons.
Yes. So. And some just bad controversial cartoons.
Yeah, generally, yeah.
So we're going to have that discussion later on in the show as well. So please stick around for that. If you're listening live, call your friends. Tell them to listen because I'll give you $1. You also have to track me down so that I can give you that dollar, but I'll give it to you, I promise.
Can I get $1 for being a guest?
No, because you agreed to come on the show before the proposition of $1 was made. Okay. So you're screwed.
Okay.
You're just wasting an hour and a half of your life.
I could have wasted it in class, but
yeah. Yeah, but it'll be on CD.
True.
And downloaded by, like, the last show which I put up was downloaded 400 times. I have no idea by who, but it's apparent.
It's a large audience, though.
At least people are downloading. I don't know if they're listening. Like, it doesn't say how many times it was completed. And, John, apparently your hair is taking up half of the webcam.
Oh, so should I move the webcam or...
I don't know if he's complaining, okay. But, you know, just comment. The great thing about chat and why it's so distracting for me is I can just keep talking about that. Yes, so we're gonna have a discussion about the controversial Danish Muhammad cartoons or editorial cartoons that have caused enormous protest and many, many deaths across the entire, like, Africa, Middle East, East Asia region, and then also very nearby in Urbana. I don't live in Illinois.
Urbana-Champaign, the U of I down there.
Okay, yes. Some recent controversy going on about there that I will be swearing about many times. But there have been some other news stories that have kind of popped up or exploded, pun was intended, recently that we're going to cover very briefly. So we're going to do a little news summary. I'm turning down John's mic so you can make fun of him in the chat window and he can't reply or say anything back to you. Yeah, I know. You didn't even hear that, did you? All right, we'll do a little brief news summary over what's happened in the past week or 2 weeks, maybe. Okay, brief news summary. Budget. The Bush administration budget proposal was turned in last week. The budget for the 2007 fiscal year that begins on October 1st of this year is a proposed $2.77 trillion, with a T, trillion dollars, and is an increase from the projected spending of this year, which is $2.71 trillion, and for the budget that was proposed last year, $2.57 trillion. Basically, just shitload of money, a little bit less than a shitload, more less than a shitload. More than we'll ever see in our entire lives. Overall, there are large increases in funding for defense and homeland security and cuts in what are called, and I hate this phrase, entitlement programs, like Medicare and Social Security, etc. There are also strange assumptions about how long the reconstruction effort in the Gulf Coast will take and how long the war will take. So needless to say, the budget is less than accurate. It has to go through an approval process, so there's plenty of time before that will become any more like noticeable or worth listening to or worth talking about. Oh, John, by the way, you can chat. You can talk to them. Oh. Or you can type to them. You can't talk to them, but you can type. Overnight, I believe, there were additional pictures from the Abu Ghraib prison torture scandal that were brought to light and published by an Australian newspaper. There are additional photos and a videotape. CNN and other news organizations have aired some of the photos. Besides the obvious injustice of torture at the prison, it is also illegal for anyone to take photographs of prisoners, inmates, etc., without the military's explicit permission. So if they had just asked nicely, then it would be perfectly fine. Prison break in Chicago. In what could be a dumbass homage to Fox's drama Prison Break, inmates from Chicago's Cook County Jail have been escaping like the rats of NIMH. This past Saturday, six inmates escaped from Cook County Jail, although all have been captured by this time. The investigation into the jailbreak has moved on to guards inside the building and the possible political motives behind the aiding of the escapees. Now, last week, there was the funeral for Coretta Scott King, and there are many different presidents and other officials, both of the church community as well as politics, obviously. And there's a little bit of controversy surrounding that, but some comments made. And I have a little audio clip of the Reverend Dr. Joseph Lowry speaking in what I think is a great, fantastic clip in many different ways, and you'll see. Just to set it up briefly, in the middle of the screen, like right behind where he's speaking and the pulpit and what have you, is President Bush, and next to him is Laura Bush. So with that image in mind, in like a giant mega church full of like 95% African Americans and Bush's white ass, picture the following happening.
I am neither a gambler nor better, but who could have brought this crowd together except Coretta? How marvelous that presidents and governors come to mourn and praise, but in the morning, will words become deeds that meet needs? Leave me alone, Sharpton. Shut up, Jesse. Let me get. I've been asked to recognize the board of directors of Southern Christian Leadership Conference and President Steele, who are here. Would you stand? I understand. Thank you very much. Mr. Coretta was the first lady of SCLC. What a family reunion. Rosa and Martin were reminiscing. They'd just begun to talk. When Martin seemed not to listen, he started to walk. The wind had whispered in his ear, I believe somebody is almost here. Excuse me, Rosa, Martin said as he did depart. His soul was on fire. He just couldn't wait. His spirit leaped with joy as he moved toward the pearly gates. Glory, glory, hallelujah. And after 40 years, almost 40 years, together at last, thank God Almighty, together at last. Thank you, Coretta. Didn't she carry her grief with dignity? Her growing influence with humility? She secured his seed, nurtured his nobility. She declared humanity's worth, invented their vision, his and hers, for peace in all the earth. She opposed discrimination based on race. She frowned on homophobia. And gender bias she rejected on his face. She summoned the nations to steady war no more. She embraced the oneness of the human family from shore to shore. Excuse me, Maya. She extended Martin's message against poverty, racism, and war. She deplored the terror inflicted by our smart bums on missions way afar. We know now there were no weapons of mass destruction over there.
And as you can hear, there's enormous, enormous applause going on, and I was praying to God that they would do a cutaway during the entire applause break, which is still kind of going on. I was just sitting there at my computer going, cutaway, 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 cutaway. Please show me Bush's face. Please, 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 please. And because CNN is respected or some crap like that, they didn't. Damn it.
Millions without health insurance. Poverty abounds. For war, billions more, but no more for the poor. Well, Coretta had harsh critics, some no one could please, but she paid them no mind. She kept speaking for the least of these. Now I'm about through. As we get old, or so I'm told, we listen into heaven like the prophets of old. I heard Martin and Coretta say, do us a favor, Joe. Those four little children I spoke of in 63, they're fine adults now, as all can see. They already know, but tell them again. We love them so dear. Assure them we'll always be near, their troubles to bless, and sanctify to them their deepest distress. Tell them we believe in them as we know you do. We know their faith in God and their love for each other will see them through. Assure them at the end of the tunnel awaits God's light, and we are confident that they will always strive for the right. Tell them don't forget to remember that we're as near as that prayer and never afar, and we can rest in peace because they know who and whose they are. What a family reunion. Thank you, Lord. Just the other day, I thought I heard you say, Coretta, my child, come on home. You've earned your rest. Your body is weary. You've done your best. Her witness and character always strong. Her spirit a melody from heaven's song. Her beauty warm like the rays of the sun. Good night, my sister. Well done. Well done.
And then the applause just carries on. I thought that was fantastic, and I would... I mean, fantastic for a funeral, and fantastic as an opportunity to say something, which, of course, right-wing broadcasters and everybody was like, oh, that was completely irresponsible, and that asshole Carter said something to, who's always building houses for the homeless and crap. I mean, people made valid political statements, and she lived a political life. She was involved in civil rights, and so there's absolutely, you know, if it was like the guy who died who was in the commercials for Dunkin' Donuts who said it's time to make the donuts, and there they had started some political discussion and somebody cared, then yeah, that would be a little weird. But this, it wasn't so much. We opened up the hour with Aerosmith, Janie's Got a Gun, and why? Well, because it's been the joke headline of just about every single television show that and station and newspaper that I've seen over the past, since Sunday. And it's so easy to make fun of that I am not going to. I'm going to replay a part of The Daily Show from Monday because it says it all. And then we'll be back with some with what has happened since Monday. So this is hilarious. I have died 3 times listening to this.
Welcome to the show. Astronaut Mike Mullane will be our guest. Man, do you ever have a weekend and you think to yourself, I'm just sad. Nothing fun ever happens anymore. Nothing really gets my blood going and gets me excited to be alive again. Well, if you had one of those weekends, look at it and listen.
Vice President Dick Cheney has accidentally shot and injured a friend with whom he was hunting.
Birdshot fired from the vice president's weapon apparently wounded a fellow hunter.
As you just heard, near tragedy over the weekend in South Texas. Vice President Dick Cheney accidentally shot a man during a quail hunt at a political supporter's ranch, making 78-year-old Harry Whittington the first person shot by a sitting VP since Alexander Hamilton. Alexander Hamilton, of course, was shot in a duel with Aaron Burr over issues of honor, integrity, and political maneuvering. Whittington was mistaken for a bird. The other player in the drama, ranch owner and eyewitness Catherine Armstrong.
We were shooting a covey of quail. The vice president and 2 others got out of the car to walk up the covey.
What kind of hunting story begins with getting out of your car?
As I sighted the great beast before us, my hand was shaking. I could barely engage the parking brake. And then a tragedy.
A bird flushed. The vice president took aim at the bird and shot, and unfortunately Mr. Whittington was in the line of fire and got peppered pretty well.
Peppered. Yes, there you have it. Harry Whittington seasoned to within an inch of his life. Peppering is what you do to a Caesar salad. He shot that dude. Whittington was rushed to the hospital where he received a very special visitor.
Vice President Cheney came by earlier this afternoon to meet with the patient for a brief period of time.
How minimally thoughtful. How you doing? How are you? I peppered you pretty good there, didn't I? Now, this story certainly has its humorous aspects. Easy to make fun of an incident such as this. Very easy. Unbelievably easy. The kind of easy that makes you want to return your check. But it also raises a serious issue. You see, I'm not just Jon Stewart, host of The Daily Show with, you know, me. I'm also a concerned parent. So moms and dads, if you're watching right now, I can't emphasize this enough. Don't let your kids go hunting with the vice president. I don't care what kind of lucrative contracts they're trying to land or energy regulations they're trying to get lifted. He'll shoot them in the face. But for more on the story, let's go out to correspondent Ed Helms, who is live in Corpus Christi, Texas. Ed, thank you for joining us.
John, I'm here at the hospital where Austin lawyer and Republican fundraiser Harry Whittington is in stable condition after being shot by Vice President Dick Cheney during a weekend quail hunting expedition. Doctors say he's recovering quickly after being shot in the face by the Vice President. I'll be here all day with continuous coverage of how Vice President Dick Cheney shot a 78-year-old man in the face after he mistook him for a small bird.
Ed, this Armstrong Ranch, what kind of facility is this?
It's a private hunting ranch where the hunter drives up to the pen-raised birds. The hunter then gets out of his car, aims his 28-gauge shotguns at slow-moving birds 3 feet away, and then the hunt is on.
Now, Ed, why would the vice president or hunters shoot at a facility with birds that have been raised in captivity and then just released to be killed?
Well, as you know, the vice president has a big entourage, Secret Service, and a full hospital detail, including 5 paramedics, 3 cardiologists, 2 defibrillators, an iron lung, the cast of ER, and that metal egg Darth Vader sleeps in. It's a group that makes a lot of noise that could scare off your average quail. So they hunt pen-raised, witless quail with no wings in order to, you know, level the playing field.
And how did this accident happen?
Well, I'm sure a sedentary, indoorsman, liberal, elite Jewbag like yourself wouldn't understand. But it's actually a very common mishap. Here's how it happens.
Hey, you see where I put my thermos? Damn, bitch! Ow!
As you can see, it's really quite... I'm sorry. Hold on a second. John, I'm being told Whittington's condition has now been upgraded from stable to stable but still shot in the face by the vice president. It's good news, really. For now, I'm Ed Helms, reporting from outside Christus Spohn Hospital in Corpus Christi, Texas, where this weekend a 78-year-old man was shot in the face by the Vice President of the United States of America. John?
Thank you very much. Ed Helms, everybody. Now, interesting story. I'm joined now by our own vice presidential firearms mishap analyst, Rob Cordry. Rob, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, John.
Obviously, Rob, a very unfortunate situation. How is the vice president handling it?
John, tonight the vice president is standing by his decision to shoot Harry Whittington. Now, according to the best intelligence available, there were quail hidden in the brush. Everyone believed at the time there were quail in the brush. And while the quail turned out to be a 78-year-old man, even knowing that today, Mr. Cheney insists he still would have shot Mr. Whittington in the face. John... he believes the world is a better place for his spreading buckshot throughout the entire region of Mr. Whittington's face.
Rob, why? Why, if he had known that Mr. Whittington was not a bird, if he had that information, Rob, why would the vice president still have shot him in the face?
John, good question. In a post-9/11 world, the American people expect their leaders to be decisive. To not have shot his friend in the face would have sent a message to the quail that America is weak.
Well, that is, I have to say, to my ears, that is horrible that he would still do that.
Look, John, the mere fact that we're even talking about how the vice president drives up with his rich friends in cars to shoot farm-raised wingless quail tards is letting the quail know how we're hunting them. Sure, right now, those birds are laughing at us in that little covey of theirs.
Well, Rob, I'm not sure birds can laugh.
Well, but... whatever they do, John, coo. They're cooing at us right now because here we are talking openly about our plans to hunt them. Jig's up, John. Quails one, America zero. Happy?
On a purely human level, is the vice president at least sorry?
John, what difference does it make? The bullets are already in the man's face. Let's move forward across party lines as a people to get him some sort of mask. Hindsight is 20/20, John. As was, ironically, the shotgun the vice president used to shoot his friend, a 78-year-old man, in what can only be described as his face.
All right. John, I turned your mic.
U.S. teens lead the world in pregnancy.
Almost as ridiculous as hearing on the news Dick Cheney shot a man today. Like, ugh.
Yeah, it's... I started to read some news information about it, and I was like, oh, well, you know, this obviously is really funny in some lot of black humor kind of ways, and I should come up with some jokes or something for my show on Wednesday. And then I started reading the articles, and it was talking about jokes that, like, Washington aides had made to each other in like the halls of the rotunda, and they were so lame that I was just like, no, okay, yeah, I'm just gonna play what I see as the smartest and the best version of making fun of this whole thing, and just the fact of repeating the fact that Vice President Dick Cheney, on a hunting trip in Texas on Saturday, shot a 78-year-old man in the face. Or, as we found out corrected yesterday, the face, arm, and chest. It was a shotgun, so it was, again, as you heard, peppered. There are BBs, which are smaller than your average BB, and he was... there are between, and I swear this is what the news article I read said, there are between 6 and 200 BBs in this man's face, chest, and heart. Because yesterday morning, one of these BBs had moved somehow into the heart area or his heart cavity and temporarily blocked blood flow, and he had a mild heart attack. And I say mild with imaginary air quotes, because as someone who is, like, my dad's had a couple mild heart attacks, I don't see a heart attack as ever being mild.
Especially one after a gunshot wound.
Yes, on a 78-year-old man. And they were talking about, oh, he's in the ICU. Like, oh, it's no big deal. Like, no, I went into an ICU over Christmas. It's like, people go in there for a reason, because it's, 'cause they can't breathe, or because their heart doesn't work, or they have an open chest wound or something.
Ugh. At least Dick Cheney got to shoot a man. That's got to be one of his...
He shot a man in Texas, you know, just to watch him die.
Yeah. Well, you know, as CJ said on the chat, you know, he was hunting the deadliest prey of all, the, you know, 78-year-old man.
No, actually, so. The deadliest prey of all are lawyers. Because that's what this man was. He's a very prominent fundraiser for Republicans.
Well, then there's no loss out there at all.
He's not dead.
You know, sorry to put it bluntly.
And my grandpa was a lawyer, and he's the reason that I can afford to go to this school. So, but my grandpa was cool, and didn't get shot in the face by the vice president of the United States.
Hunting or quail hunting or whatever, small bird hunting with the vice president. So.
Yeah, it's just, but in the past 2 hours, Dick Cheney has come out of the closet. No, he's come out of his little closet where he's been hiding and from absolutely all press. And I think the press secretary, Scott McClellan, joined him out of fear because he was getting hammered by the Washington Press Corps about this issue and why it wasn't reported for about 19 hours, something around 19, not to be specific. And he is, if you go to the, and I know I got to say it, to FoxNews.com, Cheney, of course, gave an exclusive interview to Fox News' Brit Hume, who is a bumpier version of Tom Brokaw. I don't know what that noise is. And he discusses the incident and calls Whittington a friend and then an acquaintance and uses... Yeah, it's like, oh, we're close, but not that close. And then I shot him, and he was wearing bright orange. And I grew up in a state and where, like, there are a lot of hunters. I worked at a gas station and did overnights during hunting season. And so, like, I got all the hunters coming in at 4 in the morning with their muddy boots. Bitter. And, you know, that... There's almost no way that you can miss somebody. Unless, of course, you're a very old man who has a heart condition, like Dick Cheney. I don't see... My dad couldn't drive. He just was allowed to start driving after his heart surgery. So I don't see how a man who has had as many problems with his heart as Dick Cheney can even be... allowed to carry a gun. But I don't think that matters, because he apparently also didn't have the correct stamps on his license to do the particular hunting, which they did. Lawyer hunting. You need a special license for that. But so there's lots of coverage of this, because it brings up multiple issues of secrecy, of the delay of the vice president shooting a man, which just kind of reflect onto the larger issues within the administration. And then also because Dick Cheney has had Scooter Libby, his former chief of staff, was forced to resign when he was indicted being involved in the Valerie Plame CIA covert operative blabbing, telling Robert Novak and everybody else about her. And so he's involved in that. And so Dick Cheney's like all alone in his room, and he's a sociable guy, you know. And so,
see, I'm actually kind of surprised that Dick Cheney just didn't disappear for like 2 or 3 months like he has at like every other opportunity when anything happens in this country, where he'll just not be around for.
They always say like he's at an undisclosed location.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he definitely has the most sick days out of anybody in the country, just hanging out in a room somewhere watching TV or whatever.
And he was, he had like a foot issue a couple weeks ago. I think he was in the hospital again. Yeah, there are so many weird things going on with that man. Plus the fact that he looks like the Penguin and talks like him too. And so there's plenty of coverage out there. You can go to any website, go to the Onion, and you'll, I mean, this is like an Onion headline come true, which is what some people thought it was at first. And so you can go online, find hundreds and hundreds of bad jokes about it. But know that the Daily Show, and that clip was on crooksandliars.com, definitely had the best coverage. And we're going to go on to this next topic and talk to John, because it's 6:43.
Okay.
Because that took a time, because it was so funny. But
it was good.
Yeah, definitely. And not everyone gets the Daily Show or gets to watch it and everything. So you were saying that you don't have cable.
Yeah, and unfortunately I don't have cable, so that was the first time that I've heard that terrific Daily Show.
Enjoyed that.
Yeah, exactly.
So tell me about what you do here at school, and then what, obviously you're involved in comics because that's why you're here and I've invited you, but just you're in a nutshell.
Okay. Basically what I do here at school is I try to take any class that has anything remotely tied to narrative or comics at all. So, and I've just been doing comic books since I was a little kid. I've been into comic book art and doing comics.
Little kid would be how old?
Well, I first wanted to be a comic book artist when I was in fourth grade, back when the X-Men and all that stuff was super popular. So I was a huge geek that never grew out of that.
And, yeah, what's your t-shirt wearing now?
Wearing an Incredible Hulk t-shirt right now. So, yeah, I'm that guy. But, yeah, I started putting out my own comic books when I was about 16. So me and a good friend of mine, Pete Stedman, started putting out books when I was, like, 16. So
nice.
But,
what was the content like around then?
When I was 16, it was just stupid, like, zine-ish punk rock garbage, you know, just the hate authority, all that kind of stupid stuff, you know. And then, I'd like to say my work matured a little bit, but, didn't exactly for a while. My senior year of high school, 9/11 happened and all that, which I ran a series for a while called The Adventures of Anthrax Boy and Pestilence Girl after that, which probably wasn't in the best taste in the world, but just kind of making fun of the whole paranoia. And
how did people react to it?
It did fairly well. I mean, I was, you know, just a kid in high school selling zines at a local comic book store in kind of around downstate Illinois. But I mean, I sold some issues and stuff, and I got some angry mail from people, but, you know.
Really?
Yeah, so some angry emails and whatnot, but, you know, it wasn't too bad, so.
Okay. And how old are you?
I'm 22.
22? All right. And how did your work evolve past 9/11? I mean, that's been 5 years ago.
Right.
So how has it kind of gone on since then?
Well, I started looking at particularly looking at stuff like the last piece I did, the last big piece I did was I took a Billy Bragg song, Everywhere, which is
Who's Billy Bragg?
Billy Bragg's a folk singer from Europe. He's like one of those faux folk 1980s, like punk rock meets folk music people. He's from Britain, and he does a bunch of political music. He helped with the whole Rock Against Bush albums during the last election to try to get Bush out of office here.
Which obviously worked really well.
Yeah, which worked oh so well. You know, no matter how much we raged against Bush, it didn't seem to really matter. But yeah, so I took one of his pieces, which is looking at World War. Like, the song that he wrote is actually about World War II and how the Japanese were treated during World War II, and then comparing that to what we were doing to, you know, Middle Eastern people now here in the United States, isn't like locking them up and, you know,
right, like
camps and all of the general racism that goes along with it, and
Guantanamo Bay, so, right, Japanese right. internment camps, so, on par.
Yeah, that was the last piece that I did that was overtly political, and I think it was a little bit more mature than Anthrax Boy and Pestilence.
How did kind of, you know, the whole beginning of the war on terror, and I personally hate using the phrase 9/11 just because it's used constantly,
right.
But how did that affect your work? Like, or, and since your work is a representation of you, how did that affect you?
Well, it definitely gave me a lot more stuff to kind of poke fun at with. I mean, I'm on this show talking about, you know, obscenity and controversy within comic books. So, but I mean, I don't know. Any comic book has some nature of subversiveness and, you know, anti-authority and making fun of the major mainstream culture. So, it definitely gave me a little bit more fuel to go up against and just be like, look, this is how ridiculous this situation is. So, that's where a lot of it came from. Was just in that vein.
And it kind of and it happened at a time, you know, from your senior year of high school going into college, that is a kind of
right, exactly.
a melting pot of like what's going to get you going for
right,
the next
exactly.
4 to 5 years.
Right. It all happened to lock into place right when it was, you know, that coming of age time or whatever you want to call it, of, you know, transitioning into the real world or whatever.
Or the college world,
right,
at least.
The college world, which then somehow makes you more able to jump into the real world. But
all the many issues.
But yeah, do you want to talk about the current cartoon controversy with
Yes.
Or?
First of all, do you have anything out right now that's...
I'm actually working on a relatively non-political piece right now, believe it or not.
How dare you?
Yeah, I'm working on a piece called The Adventures of Lucky Joe and Steve, and they're a couple of paramedics that are in the middle of this crazy city that's just has problems with drugs and violence and whatnot. But
if people wanted to see your work or possibly even try to get their hands on copies of it, how would they go about that?
Check out Quimby's. Chicago Comics had some of my stuff for a while. There's a website coming up soon. You can just Google my name, which is John Acapul. And
please
the last
spell
name
it.
Is spelled A-C-H-E-L-P-O-H-L. And it'll take you to a website, theoretically, within the next like month or so.
Okay.
So.
And for anyone listening to the podcast version, you can also email me at kbarrick@podomatic.com. That's kbarrick@podomatic.com. If you're interested in seeing any of his work, and I can be the pimp that I've always wanted to be.
That's exactly what I need, is somebody to help, you know, get people to look at my work too. So.
Things arranged. There we go.
That'll be nice.
All right, and see, you last week were the one who pointed out to me that the school newspaper of the University of Illinois at Urbana and Champaign.
Yeah.
That's how you say it?
Daily Illini from...
Illini, okay. I don't
Urbana
know.
Urbana Champaign was the only... I think it was the first... I'm not 100% sure on that, if they were the first one to print the... you know, these controversial cartoons or whatever from Denmark. But, a student newspaper in the middle of Bufu nowhere, Illinois.
We aren't regulated by the FCC, so you can say buttfuck.
Okay, in the middle of buttfuck nowhere, Illinois managed to be the only paper, like, for for, you know, pretty much throughout the entire country to actually have the guts to publish these things and be like, look, here's what all the controversy is about so you can actually understand it, which brings in a whole bunch of other issues, apparently.
Right. I mean, you know. And a lot of other people would say that they had the stupidity to publish those cartoons as well,
right.
Just being the contrarian. I did some research on LexisNexis because I just found out through my newspaper class that we have access to that, so I don't have to pay for it.
That's a nice thing to have.
Or that I'm already paying for it. And first of all, these cartoons appeared in December, or not December, September of last year. There were no stories about these Danish cartoons in the U.S. press until the Boston Globe reported on them and the order to Danish, Swedish, and Norwegians to evacuate Gaza from the previous day. According to the Boston Globe, the cartoons were commissioned, and this is walking on irony. These cartoons were commissioned, as I break the microphone, after the newspaper's editors learned that a Danish artist could not be found to illustrate a children's book on Islam for fear of infuriating Muslim radicals. So they had this open call for submissions of cartoons or pictures, illustrations, what have you, of Muhammad. Which then resulted in infuriating Muslim radicals.
Right.
And strangely and ironically enough, the great portion of the parts of the world which are inflamed by this only learned about these cartoons because of a free press, because they were being republished, because they were being talked on talk radio throughout the Middle West. I mean, that's the only reason that they knew of them in this very, very broad scope.
Well, I mean, what you end up talking about with this type of a thing is, I mean, okay, let me start off by saying, yes, these images are offensive and they are racist, okay?
And I actually have them up. Their newspaper pulled down the website, which had them on there. I'd saved the pictures before that, and they're right now up on the website at MT, letter N, letter T, outburst.blogspot.com. And there are six of them, which the paper printed, and they're all up there for you to see.
Yeah, like I was going to say, though, like, first off, yeah, they are racist, and not really that good of comics, first of all. I mean, to be honest, they're kind of dopey. But
which no one's really commented on.
Right, yeah. I mean, from, like, a drawing standpoint, most of them are drawn really badly.
Or even, like,
they're not
a
really
gimmick.
That funny. They're not, you know, I mean, like, but they're more just offensive, like, straight-out offensive. But, I mean, that kind of brings to the issue, though, of, like, it's not really so much that these comics were made that's the problem, because, I mean, like, you know, Robert Crumb definitely made much, much more offensive stuff in the 60s and underground comics than what these are. And most of them were, you know, it was against women and against feminism and, you know, just all of the other ridiculous, ridiculous things that Crumb managed to, you know, wage against and whatnot. But it's more of the format in which they were put out, or, you know, how they were distributed that seems to be the issue. Because these ran in a major newspaper, it's going to, you know, bring in the fodder and, you know, attacks just because it's, you know, it's a newspaper. Tons more people read that than what will ever see the biggest underground comic, you know, ever. So.
Well, so far at the University of Illinois, what happened was that just yesterday, the two main editors have been suspended and will most likely get fired. Again, the website which had what was printed in the paper was taken down, though I'm sure that you can get it cached on Google. And the school seems to not be happy, and there's an investigation that's going to go on, and people aren't pleased at all. What do you think in terms of, like, you know, again, but fuck Illinois, how does
right.
that kind of thing.
Well, I mean, I think it's a complete knee-jerk reaction to the type of press that they got in, like, the Tribune and the Red Eye. When I first found out about this from the Red Eye, which is, like, the worst paper ever. It's even, like, in my opinion, worse than the Daily Illini as far as papers go.
The opinions of those on the show.
But I first heard about it in the Red Eye, and they're like, oh, well, you know, most every other paper had the good taste to not print these cartoons, you know.
Which is so subjective.
Which is exactly. It's an extremely, like, it's like a, such a backhanded, like, you know, like, way of being like, oh, you know, well, they printed these things and had some guts, but they, you know, grumble, grumble, grumble.
Yeah.
But, like, the thing that doesn't make sense to me is the way that the school printed them was they even had, like, a tagline on it, and they were like, look, we're not endorsing these cartoons. We're just trying to give you some type of an idea of what's causing all of this controversy. And I mean, you know, it's, like it or not, it's part of the news article. It's part of the news, these cartoons are, because they're what is inciting violence, you know, throughout many different parts of the world. It's all part of the story.
And the editor had even said in that article that, you know, these are bigoted and racist and offensive.
Right, exactly. And I mean, nobody seems to be questioning that they're racist and bigoted, and, you know, and I mean, but yeah, I definitely don't think that the editors should have been suspended, and you know, I think that's one step that's like, that's too far, and it's also, I mean, I think it is a necessary part of the story to, like, at least let people see what's causing all of this, you know, like I said, all this violence and upheaval. So I think it was a major mistake for them to then, like, backlash and suspend the two editors, main editors of the paper, because also like they took this gutsy stand, you know, and then for the school to then dump them out, you know, like it gets rid of any type of credibility or any type of, you know, actual journalistic integrity that paper really has.
Right. Doing that. So. I think well, first we're gonna go over, but there's not another show after this, and I don't have to go home and watch Lost until 8. But I think I'm gonna try to assemble some people from around campus to discuss this further. Most likely and hopefully next week, because I don't think that this issue is going away anytime soon, either locally or globally. But one thing which I was, you know, really curious about was your opinion about the quality and the artistic merit, if there is of any, about some of them, and the content. I mean, the one example that has been described constantly over every single article is the one of the Prophet Muhammad with his turban as a bomb.
Right. I mean, I think that's sad to say, it's one of the, I guess, in quotations, better one of these, I guess. It's kind of a one, I mean, like, all of these aren't really, they're not that funny. They're not funny.
But see,
they're not, like, you know, I mean, like,
I would say that, like, that example, that is a good editorial cartoon.
Right.
That makes a point that is not necessarily funny. It is not necessarily an opinion to be agreed upon. It is an opinion about a religion, which we all have those. And it's depicted in a clever and, I think from at least my copy of it, a well-done way.
Right. I mean,
that particular one. Not, of course, saying that, like, that's a viewpoint to that I would agree with or anything like that.
As far, for me, as far as, like, technically drawn the best one of these, it's the, I don't even know how to describe it. It's where he's got the knife or whatever.
Oh, it's a, yeah, it's with two, he's bookmarked by two women in burqas and the black cloth taken away from their eyes is placed over his eyes. And then he's holding it's not a knife, but the curvy knife thing.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, to me, that one's technically the best drawn one. It's got the most, like, things happening in it with, like, you know, objects coming towards you and whatnot. But it's not by any means a good cartoon, per se. Like, I'm kind of actually kind of confused by what its general point is supposed to be, you know?
I would agree with that.
I mean, yeah, I mean, like, in my opinion, that's the best drawn one.
And, like, how about content or a gimmick or, you know, trying to get their, well, first of all, what point are they trying to make, and then do they make it in a way that's,
well, I mean, yeah, I think the I don't know, turban bomb one or whatever, if you want to call it that, you know, I mean, that one definitely makes the biggest point. It's, you know, it's the most effective as far as, like, okay, here's the joke or the comment or whatever you want to put it that way. I mean, the rest of them are relatively vague as to what exactly. I mean, it might just be because I'm an American looking at it. I don't have the right background to be able to interpret some of them. There's one where it's like Muhammad and a moon and a star, and I don't even know what the hell's going on in that one.
I think it's a flag. I mean, a flag reference. I'm bad with symbology right now.
So I don't really know what's even going on in that one. There's another one where it's they're up at you know, heaven or whatever, and there's Muslims walking up to a person who's saying
to Muhammad,
stop, we're, you know, we're out of virgins or whatever, and that's just such a lame, like, one-liner.
Yeah, it's a stupid joke, and it's rendered in a stupid way.
I mean, it's drawn just atrociously, so most of them are drawn badly. They're just dopey. None of them have backgrounds in them or anything, even, you know, like, that's another thing.
Except for the glorious, it's stop, like, stop, we ran out of virgins.
Right. That's the only one with actually a background in it.
Give it credit, so, come on!
But its background consists of, you know, some cloud lines and some gray tone.
Yeah.
Nothing really to speak of. But,
I don't know, like, I mean, I think talking, especially at this school, you know, if my opinion is that a lot of people know just about as much about politics as they need to choose which funny button they're going to wear on their messenger bag that day.
Right.
And so I think talking about these cartoons and actually seeing them is perfect material for this school and is entirely appropriate for our school. Needless to say, I don't think F News is going to be publishing these, you know, anytime soon. But that's why next week I think I'm going to bring a round table of people from around the school to discuss them. Just because there's the idea of the message, but there's also the idea of, you know, yeah, but are they dumb? Like, is it like the crazy person on like the crazy homeless guy on the street yelling, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to kill you? Like, there's some, like, yes, he's making a threat, but he's also the crazy guy on the street. Like, it's not a credible threat. These are cartoons, which, first of all, are editorial cartoons. But second of all, some of them, like the Stop, Stop, We Ran Out of Virgins, it's the crazy guy down the street going, I'm going to kill you, or the five-year-old holding a water pistol to you. It's not, it's like, okay, yeah, you're a stupid person making a stupid point with a stupid cartoon. Thank you for proving that you're an idiot. Next.
Right.
And that's why I think that the one with the turban and the bomb is the most often described, because...
Right. I mean, yeah.
It makes its point.
Right. I mean, it's pretty much the only successful, or at least successful through, you know, an American lens of looking at it.
Yeah.
Comic.
Judeo-Christian, point of view and everything.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you have to look at it somewhat like an anthropologist, where it might make sense in its natural environment to be viewed. But
did you really have to try hard not to say habitat?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I did have to try hard not to say habitat.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah, again, this is something which we're going to discuss next week. I read in one of the articles recently, it was mentioning that someone, a How more vague can I be? Some Muslim in, I think, Pakistan was saying how freedom of speech for the Western world is our version of terrorism, and how freedom of speech will never work with radical Islam. And while I was reading that, I believed that. I don't think it's going to work.
I think there is some merit to that. I mean, if you're going to be look at like the straight down fundamentalist line, I mean, yeah, free speech doesn't really work with fundamentalist Islam.
I mean, radicals of any type, yeah. Anyone being wrong and against what they're saying is like,
right.
You have to act on that.
But I mean, I think like the major problem with this type of cartoons is because it completely overgeneralizes absolutely everything. Like, it's kind of like, if you think about it, like, I mean, you know, terrorists and Muslims, why does that even go together? I mean, you know, like, we had our own terrorist attack in Oklahoma City, and that was by a white guy, a non-Muslim, you know? I mean, like, it's all about, you know, fanaticism at its very core. There's a small number of crazy fanatics in any religion and in any, you know, set of ideas that are that strong. So it's just, it's kind of ridiculous when you get down to it. You look like you really need to say something right now.
That's challenging because, like, okay, we have to go, but with the whole why do we associate Muslim with terrorists? And, yes, there is Timothy McVeigh and the Oklahoma City bombing. And, hey, I'm from Montana. I know all about crazy guys in sheds with guns. But blowing up a building in the Midwest and killing, I don't want to say how many people because I don't know, a couple hundred thousand, I'm not sure. And then comparing it to blowing up an icon and thousands of more people with planes. It changed things much, much more than Oklahoma City did or could, I think.
But I mean, I think you still have to look at it as like, it's not, it can't be simply a thing of religion or whatever. It's just anybody with extremist ideals on one sector or another.
Oh, certainly.
You know, so
I get freaked out by evangelists, by Christian evangelists.
Yeah, as do I. So
I get freaked out by my own family's religious beliefs sometimes. But I don't know. Again, this is going to have to continue next week. But this has been In the Loop. Thank you for listening so much, whether you are listening live. Well, especially for you for listening live. And then also on the podcast version, we're on freeradiosaic.org. You can listen to all of our 16 hours of great programming. And you can apply for a show if you are a student here. Otherwise, you can listen to this in podcast form. Go to my website. Go to the school's radio station website. Find me through that, et cetera, et cetera. And we'll be going on live, and we'll be discussing more about this next week, unless Cheney shoots anybody else, from six.
Do a whole piece on that.
Oh, well, I could do a play, a performance piece, interpretive dance. next Wednesday, 6 till 7 Central Time, or 7:10 ish, whenever I decide to stop talking. I want to thank you, John, so much.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
The more people that can listen to me talk, and I'm a whore when it comes to attention. So,
well, thanks for letting me come on and plug some of my work to some degree. So
that's no problem. I will let you whore yourself out here if you know.
I would like the chance to come back and whore out my work some more.
Very good. And again, you can contact me at kbarrick, KBARRICK. At podomatic.com if you would like to get in touch with John about seeing it and purchasing or
Yeah.
If you want to see what he does, if you think what he's talked about has been interesting or want to see some good new comics out there, underground comics out there, we can hook you up. Or if you just want to say, hey, you suck, or why is your hair so big in the webcam?
That works too.
Yeah, whatever's good. We're going to go out with what we came in with. So thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week.
Just begun. Now everybody is on.